Can I join?
It's only for queers.
Slightly unbalanced, we are still Queer As Folk. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Today, we are recapping Season 4, and once again, playing Queer As Folk Trivia. We broke the season down into 10 main beats, roughly in chronological order, that we'll talk about. Way back at the beginning of Season 4, we have Hunter's custody status. As you recall, Matt, this season kicked off. Hunter and Michael had hit the road at the end of Season 3 in Brian's Corvette, and were staying in a seedy motel.
We're running out of cash fast.
You have a credit card.
If I use it, they can track us. Spin it.
Dude, what's up?
Yes, and trying to keep like their credit card usage down to a minimum. And it's like making very brash decisions to show how they are actually better capable of taking care of Hunter than Hunter's mother. And how are we going to do that? By taking him away.
This was the last time that Hunter sucked a dick.
Right. Oh yes, because he blew the trucker for money.
They needed junk food, so I don't think that Hunter had any male on male contact after that. Could be wrong. This story was kind of okay. Melanie's involvement did it a disservice, but we got to see some good Hunter screen time, and Hunter's mother reappeared and had her moment, and then she was never seen again. But I think at a high level, this story was one of my more enjoyable ones for the season. I just like seeing this drama that young Hunter is going through as he tries to find his own way in the world away from Rita Montgomery.
Yes. Now, when Hunter first entered the story, were you not actually a fan of him?
I was not.
You were not. But I'm hoping, I feel like through season four, though, I feel like maybe you've changed your mind about him.
I did. I warmed up to Hunter, the young man.
Oh, good.
Initially, I thought that Hunter was like the Oliver being introduced to the Brady Bunch, where all the Brady kids had aged out of being wild and reckless. And so they wanted to reintroduce youth to the show and bring in a younger character. And so at first, I didn't like the whole Hunter, you like young dick.
How old are you?
You having a good night?
How old do you want me to be?
You can't be more than 16.
You like young dick? You could suck it for a bill. For two, you can fuck me. Without a condom.
I don't know. It just seemed weird at first, but I like this.
Gotta have a catchphrase.
I like the well-adjusted Hunter. Another recurring theme that came up through this entire season was Melanie being pregnant, her on-again, off-again pregnancy, which I thought was pretty disruptive to the season.
I feel like it should be like Melanie being pregnant?
Yeah.
Because, again, whenever it felt convenient, her pregnancy was going to be a hindrance, or look at all she can do.
Some episodes she was very pregnant, and in others, mm-hmm. they didn't even bother to mention it or even bother to stuff the baby bump up her costume.
No continuity.
I feel like this storyline should have had more attention paid to it. I mean, this was a big deal. Minimally, the pregnancy should have like been time compressed so that it wasn't this season long on again, off again thing. I feel like from a storytelling standpoint, everything that they covered with her pregnancy could have been compressed into a shorter episodic period of time. And then we wouldn't have had all these problems with the story with her weaving in and out. Because you remember at the beginning, like Michael wouldn't even let her pick up the groceries.
I agree, because it doesn't really add a whole lot of drama to the story, except for at the very end when they've decided to end their relationship. Like there was nothing else to really add to the storyline other than like, well, we had Lindsay pregnant at the beginning of this series, so let's go ahead and get Melanie pregnant. But then they didn't really do a whole lot with it.
It makes me think that it was like genius writing that actually Russell T. Davies wrote in the original Queer As Folk to not show the pregnancy. They just showed the birth.
Right. I think that's all we could have used. Like,
yeah, she just shows up one day and
there's the baby. Now insert the drama with the baby having been born. Cool. Great.
Right. Or she like has to go away for work for a while and they're going to have the baby in Hawaii or something like that.
You're acting like they had a budget for season four.
Another good story this season was Ted and Blake.
Look, I know it's upsetting. The person you most wanted to hear, you refused to listen, but you can't be responsible for his reaction.
Just spare me the AA bullshit, would you?
You offered him your truth.
Yeah, truth.
That's all that matters.
Well, if that's all that matters, how come you've never offered me your truth? You know, I'm going to skip the coffee. I'll see you later.
You remember Blake?
Oh, I always remember Blake.
Yeah,
Blake
was good.
My favorite.
I really enjoyed seeing those two work through recovery together because they both kind of had their own recovery. Blake was a little further along than Ted was, a lot further along. But those two actors were really good. Scott Lowell and Dean Armstrong could really make those scripts work. I thought that throughout the series, Ted's struggle with recovery seemed to kind of ebb and flow. At some moments, he was one step away from grabbing the crystal pipe. And in others, he's running Brian's business. But in hindsight, in looking at this season overall, I think the writers got it right because sometimes people are in recovery, or they're just fine. And then out of nowhere, they struggle with a relapse. So I think it was good treatment of Ted's addiction.
And Blake is, I think, one of the only reoccurring characters of like the large group of reoccurring characters that we get in this series. Blake is the only one that has had something substantial behind him. Everyone else gets written off relatively easy, or their storyline is wrapped up. But here it felt complicated. It felt, you know, how should we feel about Blake and Ted? And, you know, and is Blake making the right decision by stepping away from Ted? But also he made the decision to sleep with Ted. And how does that complicate? Like, that is where it was interesting. And I just wish the series would take all of the writing that seriously.
Yeah. And it really had a good foundation in Blake going back to season one, episode 3 or 4, Ted's Not Dead.
Right. Like the fact that they managed to take a character like Blake, who could have easily just been like that one off.
Yeah. Throwaway character.
Tweaked out twink into something for us to hold on to throughout the series.
I think it was really Dean Armstrong's acting that sold that story. Too. This guy's really good. We got to find more stories for him. We got to keep him involved. He comes back in season 5, by the way. A terrible story, kind of a terrible story, was Justin and the Pink Posse.
I think we should wear little whistles around our necks. That way, if someone attacks us, all we have to do is blow.
Like that?
Would you like to say something?
Well, who do you think will come running?
Them?
They can't even defend themselves. The cops? If a bunch of homo haters want to beat the shit out of you, you're not going to stop them by blowing a little whistle.
Then what do you suggest?
We protect ourselves. Patrol the streets.
You mean a vigilante group?
Yeah, the Pink Posse.
Thinking about it now, I don't know is that I hate it nearly as much as I did at the time. Compared to some of the other stories, this one was at least kind of amusing. We commented a lot about Justin turning to the dark side here. And his dalliance with the dark side was like quickly forgotten. It's almost as if that whole Pink Posse thing like never happened. And that's a shame because that was a lot of emotional baggage that was dumped on top of Justin to carry around, but he didn't carry it.
No. And like, I remember being when they were first trying to create some sort of attraction for Justin and Cody, I guess this is kind of hot. But then when they were like using the gun to be aroused by it and they gave each other hand jobs, I was like, I'm no longer aroused by this.
This has gone into a weird place.
Yeah.
I did like Cody though. I thought Cody was pretty hot.
Yes. Agreed.
Well, let's not forget that Uncle Vic died this season.
It's Uncle Vic.
What about him? You have a shit fit when you showed up with all those pots and pans? Well, I hope so. That son of a bitch.
Working today. Uncle Vic is gone. He passed away.
What the hell are you talking about?
We took the stuff over to him. He was there. In front of the TV. Rodney, and the paramedics came, but
Huh? Gotta get my food.
It's okay, Ma. It'll wait.
You know, what's amazing to me is that we are only halfway through our bullet points and a lot of shit happens in season four.
There's a lot of beats in this season for 14 episodes, which is something that we've commented on quite a bit is the writing staff shoves a lot of stuff our way versus going deep on a smaller number of issues. So it's like, do you want quantity or do you want quality?
Quality. Please.
Yeah. Season four was very high on quantity, not so much on quality. I thought it was a totally dumb move on the part of Conan Lippman to kill off Vic. Vic is written out of the show instead of following his life with Rodney in their own house. They replaced it with hetero stories like Hunter coming out as straight or Lindsay briefly being straight, Debbie and Carl's straight romance. I think the show should have really stuck more closely to the title of queer as folk and let Rodney and Vic play out their life together and have a meaningful story about the homosexual experience of older gay men.
Because that is something we just simply don't have a lot of right now. Because we lost so many in the AIDS epidemic, we lost so many of those stories that it was rare that we could have seen something like that. So then to see two older gay men.
Two older positive gay men, yeah.
Living their life together. Yeah, just living their life together. That would have been a huge step.
But they killed him off. I don't get that at all.
And all we get of Rodney after that is a simple kiss on the cheek at the end of the season.
He almost looked like he was crying, but not quite.
No. I think he had moved on.
Speaking of straight stories, Debbie and Horvath had a nice arc here. Debbie spends most of the season trying to get back into Horvath's pants.
I can't believe you got these tickets in the skybox.
I'm glad you're having a good time.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, I'm not.
You're not?
I'm having a great time!
I hope Catherine doesn't mind.
That I went to the game with a friend?
It was cute, but again, show's called Queer as Folk. We don't necessarily need to see middle-aged, straight, episodic TV, right?
This is why a lot of times I am a bigger fan of Looking than I am of Queer as Folk.
Yeah.
I'll say it.
Unabashedly Looking, gay.
Yes. Like, yes, Queer as Folk had some more risque or more flashy moments of queerness, but it becomes far more domesticated and in its later seasons where I think Looking was like, hey, this is unabashedly going to be a gay show. Yes, there are a couple of straight characters, straight-ish characters, but don't worry, we're going to get our gayness on in this show. And they do. I mean, we got to see everything from rimming.
Now you know what rimming is.
Thank you. We got everything from rimming to complicated relationships to much more intricate portrayals of what gay sex is like. And that's why I really love Looking, and I will defend it to its end. I know a lot of people thought it was boring, quote unquote, compared to Queer as Folk, but I think Looking was much more truthful.
Any show where Russell Tovey comes into it and takes his clothes off.
Yeah. and also a gay man playing a gay act, playing a gay character. Like we had that with Russell Tovey, with Jonathan Groff. They managed to fill that show with gay actors, and it was great.
Russell Tovey does a great podcast called Art Talk. He's quite the art collector, and they talk to you a lot of big name artists too, as well as people at like the Michael Stipe level of pop music and things like that. It's a really, really good podcast if you want to check it out. Another interesting arc in this series was Brian's testicular cancer.
Gotta break cock.
It's the first time anyone's ever said that to me. Thanks.
Although there is something I'd like to talk to you about. Why don't you give me a call?
I'm sorry, I don't do encores.
I'm a doctor.
What do you want to do, get paid to probe my prostate?
I just thought you should know you've got a lump on your left testicle. If I were you, I'd have it checked out. The sooner the better.
Good idea. thought the execution was kind of lacking. The notion that Brian would do all of his testicular cancer treatment, surgery, etc., without telling anyone seemed really, really far-fetched. It's like, that's like a major life event. You kind of don't do those solo. I don't know anybody that does. I didn't think that this character needed to. This could have been the moment where Brian realized that he had to rely on other people and started to open up versus this metaphysical Vic from the grave thing that we're handed.
I know I said in the previous episode, I think retroactively actually enjoyed having Vic appear the way he does in those episodes. I think that my biggest issue is the way they handled this storyline in terms of the secretive nature of it and the way that it's used as like ammo against Justin, definitely used against Justin more than it's used against Michael. And I found that incredibly unfair. It just drove me bonkers that Justin continually got punished for like caring.
Right. Justin was a little bit of a punching bag this whole season.
Yeah. I was like, when did he become the Ted of the series? Like, right. Jesus.
One of the most divisive stories that we talked about was Sam Auerbach.
That's it. Yeah, that's the way. Yeah,
I can't believe I'm actually painting with Sam Auerbach. Yeah,
keep stroking.
What are you doing?
I told you. Keep stroking.
No. Oh! Oh my God. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I think you should know I'm happily married.
Yeah, who's a lucky guy?
He's not a guy, he's a woman.
All the better. Call her. We'll have a three-way. No!
Oh! 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 God! Oh! God!
Oh! 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 Oh, my nose! Oh, my God. No, that's just a little Riata red number 9. Oh, you really must be a dyke with a right hook like that.
You are the most repellent man I've ever met, even if you are a genius.
This story definitely could have been told better. The pacing and evolution of the relationship between Sam and Lindsay was really hard to follow. And we're also very befuddled by what Lindsay was actually feeling. Was she into him or not? That scene where they had sex in the gallery was so like weirdly staged that we thought she was raped. We didn't understand this story, and I don't think we're alone.
Yeah, we didn't buy into this some like intellectual attraction she had to him because he is brash and misogynistic and just an overall disgusting individual, yet she somehow is drawn to his pure animal magnetism. It's like, what? No. That's just a disservice to who Lindsay is as a character. And then, again, that sex scene was disgusting. Not because it's straight sex, but because of the question of consent in that is so vague and hard to answer. And then to have him, like, I guess, fall in love with Lindsay. What? He blatantly tells it to her face. He's had conquests and he's had girlfriends all over the world, but there's something different about you. I'm like,
well, that part I can believe. It's like the whole part of him starting out as like such an awful person and then becoming somebody that we're supposed to think could make Lindsay happy. This story was just weird and it was all over the place. Do you remember Anthony the Bug Chaser?
Yes.
All I want is this. From the moment I saw you, I've fantasized about you. Admired you. Wanted to be like you. That's why I want you to give me the gift.
What?
I want you to be the one.
Anthony.
Make me positive. Like you.
Wait, stop it.
That story was cool. I like that one. I like the creepy vibe that Anthony brought to it. Because we could tell right away that there's something about him.
Yeah, there was something off about him. And then to have it be revealed the way it was revealed was interesting. And to this day, I don't actually think he went to that chaser party.
Oh, I do.
That he describes. I don't think he did.
Why wouldn't he?
I know there's just something about the way that he describes it, and it's that nonchalant manner in which he says, this man has clearly spent so much time trying to find the right way to do it that to just like with on a dime flip the way he's gonna try to contract HIV, I didn't buy.
He did say it wasn't the way that he would have preferred. And so then instead he goes and gets fucked like, by 20 guys.
But that's the thing. Like, I feel like he says it to only hurt Ben because he's been hurt.
I didn't like the way that this story tied up with Michael, where Ben wrote that short story.
And then Michael reads it. He stole Anthony's life to write this beautiful story. Beautiful, like moving story. How brilliant it is. Yes.
So like most things in this season, the execution of good story ideas sometimes got in the way of telling a really, really compelling story and just made us notice the problems with it versus understanding what the writers are really trying to teach us. The Drew Boyce story was certainly fun to watch. There's good eye candy. And Drew has an actual obstruction in his path. He's a highly visible professional athlete, and he's also gay.
Oh, my, how the boy can score.
I got a good kicker.
Oh, I'll say.
And this story, I thought, was pretty well told, albeit with a few accidental comedic moments, like Drew stalking Emmett in the SUV and on front of his house. I thought that was a little, like, dumb.
But to watch his evolution of saying, like, this is just a thing he does. He's not gay. He's not, you know, the whole question of masculinity versus femininity in gay men. And then the way he starts to change his rules bit by bit with Emmett to where he actually falls for him, I really enjoyed. And I also just appreciated that Emmett understood his worth in that storyline. Because, yeah, he could have easily have kept just being, like, the dirty little secret. But then he recognizes that he could never go in the closet because he was never in the closet.
That's right.
And I really love that.
In what is surely a footnote to this season, Michael and Ben got married.
Michael Novotny, you are the man I've been looking for all my life. I am so very blessed to have found you, which is why I'm asking you to do me the honor of accepting my hand in marriage.
This should have been a much bigger deal. Even if it was just a more elaborate fantasy wedding in Canada, these characters deserved more. And Queer as Folk has never gotten a wedding right throughout the entire series.
Ever.
They're always footnotes and afterthoughts and used as plot devices. I hated that this was such a footnote to the entire show.
Agreed. You said all I needed to say. Because also, who were those people at that wedding?
I was like, that's right.
There is no way we know 3/4 of the people who have just watched this ceremony.
I would say more closer to like 98%.
Yes.
We knew five like, out of like 50.
There's Debbie, there's Emmett, but then who's everybody else?
Yeah, Ted was there, so.
Okay, so 97%.
Right. Still Queer as Folk, stick around. A lot more to talk about tonight. Okay, do you want to play Queer as Folk trivia?
Bring it on.
Okay. At the end of season three, I challenged Matt to Queer as Folk trivia. And Matt, last time you got 9 correct, 6 partially correct, and 11 wrong. So you actually had more mostly right than wrong. So you did okay. That was 26 questions last year. I've got 26 for you today. You can also follow along at home and post your scores on our Facebook page and see if you can beat Matt. Last year, I had some sounds from the show prepared for the right, wrong, and halfway right answers. So if you get the answer right, you're going to hear.
Now you know what rimming is.
If you get the answer completely wrong, you'll hear.
You fucked up big time.
If you get the answer partially right, you'll hear regular Roy. And. as a bonus, if you are just so flagrantly wrong that you should have no business doing a podcast about this show, you'll face the wrath of Justin's father and hear,
"Oh, God!"
That's great. I kind of want to see if I could get one blatantly wrong just so we can give that to the listeners. All right, let's see how we go.
Okay, so Matt, you got to keep score as we play.
Okay.
So you got some paper handy?
I am ready.
Okay, let's play Queer's Folk Trivia. What's the name of Ted's orchid that Melanie and Lindsay take care of while he's in rehab?
Go ahead and cue up Justin's father, because I have no idea.
I don't think that's a Justin's father one. This is a tough one.
Thank you. Let's see. From now on, I feel like when we do trivia, I should get multiple choice. That way,
oh, that's a good idea.
This can truly be a.
We can do that in 1 year's time when we finish season 5.
Okay, great.
Do you want the answer?
Yeah.
It's Droopy.
You fucked Droopy. Up big time.
Droopy. Wow.
Yep. What is the name of Ted's crystal meth dealer?
Ooh, it's Dr.
There's actually two choices. You gonna pack it in?
Now I'm just enjoying the music.
Okay. It's Dr. C or Mark?
You fucked up big time.
Dr. C.
Or Mark. His real name was Mark.
Yes.
Which famous actor does Cody Bell mockingly call Justin?
Oh my gosh.
Well, if it isn't, you've got mail.
Meg Ryan.
Now you know what rimming is.
There
Thank
you go.
Thank you. Okay, some of your trivia questions are deep cuts from things we have not talked about in a very long time.
But we love Meg Ryan, though. No? This one you'll know. What was Ted's first job after leaving rehab?
He was a singing waiter.
Now you know what rimming is.
There you go. What was Michael's fairy name?
Oh my gosh. This was in season 4?
Yeah, it was. Well, we took a break, so it was like a year and a half ago that we covered that episode.
Wow. Like we said, like a whole bunch has happened in this season that, like, it feels like forever that happened.
Ooh. Give up?
Yeah.
You fucked up big time.
Dumplane. What was Emmett's fairy name?
No, we're not doing that. You got to pick out another question because I'm not going to know this.
You fucked up big time.
On a clear day. Okay. What is Dumpster Boy's real name?
Ooh. Jason Kemp.
Now you know what rimming is.
There you go. Look at that. What homework subject does Vic help Hunter with?
Was it math?
Now you know.
I'll give that to you. Algebra. Because remember, Vic is good with numbers.
Yes.
Where does Jennifer Taylor find office space for Brian?
Oh, at an abandoned bathhouse.
Now you know what rimming is.
Who discovered Brian's testicular cancer?
Oh, God. It was that doctor that was his trick at Babylon.
Yeah, you would never know his name because his actual name is never actually said in the show.
Okay.
It's Shane, Dr. Shane, but you said doctor, so.
Now you know what rimming is.
There we go. This is a question in 4 parts.
What? This is like that moment in Back to School when Rodney Dangerfield is taking his final test. And he's like, I have just one question in 27 parts. Okay.
Actually, it's six. Name six criminal acts that Justin committed in season four.
Let's see. Definitely assault. I feel like he did a breaking and entering.
Into what?
I feel like he broke into something.
I don't have that one.
Oh, I definitely count public lewdness because he gave Cody a hand job in public.
I didn't have that one either.
Oh, I'm gonna count that one.
You've got one out of six that I've got on my list. Don't worry, the music has another minute 52 on it.
Jesus. what else did he do?
Think of the easy ones.
There's got to be some sort of defacing of public property.
I didn't have that one, but that one's okay. I'll give you that one.
I think that's all I got. That's all I can think of.
Okay. So the six that I've got are underage drinking, weed smoking, sexual assault because he pulled the clothing off of that guy in the pink posse, simple assault because he punched the straight guy in the face, and felonious assault with a weapon when he threatened Chris Hobbs. Justin is a criminal.
Well, yeah, we knew that in season one when he stole... when he drove off across state lines to New York City.
That's right. Like,
yeah, we know that. I'll take that sorta.
What were Vic and Rodney serving at their dinner party when Debbie arrived unannounced?
Oh God.
I didn't think you'd know this.
Because she makes a point about it.
Oh, no, you're thinking of a different one. You're thinking of the next question.
Oh.
You fucked up.
Oh, then I don't know.
They made lobster souffles for their six gay guests. The next one is, what dish did Vic make for Debbie when she stopped by his house right before their blow-up fight?
It wasn't a lasagna, was it?
Nope.
No. Was it a pie?
It's in the pastry family. It's German. It starts with a K. You've probably never had one.
No, I probably have not.
It's a Kugelhof.
You fucked up big time.
Oh, yeah, no.
Name two crimes that Ted committed in season four.
What would you call the crime when he steals from Gus's college fund?
Theft.
Theft. He does definitely. Well, obviously, theft and illegal drug use. Those are two crimes he did.
Now you know what rimming is.
Another one would have been computer hacking, because remember he broke into the Wortshafter computer network.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's true.
What's the name of Michael's comic shop?
Didn't we joke about this and it's like Liberty Comics?
We joked about it, but it's not Liberty Comics.
No. He buys it from that one guy. Buzzy. Bum, 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 bum.
Do you give up?
Yes, I do.
You fucked up big time.
Red Cape Comics. I think you'll know this next one. What's Hunter's favorite brand of denim?
Diesel.
Now you know what rimming is.
There we go. What size underwear does Hunter wear?
Should be small, but I think they probably put them in medium.
Well, this had an inch, measured in inches.
Oh, in inches. Probably 30? 29?
According to Debbie, size 28 tighty whities with skid marks.
You fucked up big time.
That's Debbie making a joke, not what Hunter actually wears. I don't count that.
What was the name of the Chinese herbalist that Michael and Justin bought a boner tea from?
Oh my God. listeners, these questions are really, really hard and really tough. So if you're able to answer all of these accurately, good on you, because I don't know how he thinks I know all of this.
Well, it starts with master. He's Master.
Master Nee.
Now you know what rimming is.
See? You know what they are. You just need a little hint. A name four times that Melanie sucked as a lawyer in season four.
She didn't. She did go after Jeffrey Pendergrass. She didn't try to sue Sam Auerbach for raping her wife. I think that's one. She didn't go after Ted for stealing money from her.
Two more.
I think one more, but okay.
We talked about one in this episode.
Yes. She didn't protect Hunter from his mother. Oh my God. I was so mad. I was so angry at her.
This next one I'll give you a hint on, because it was a very long time ago that we talked about it. Melanie was involved in a case at her law office.
Yeah, there was a lesbian couple custody case.
There we go. Look at that. You got all four of them.
Now you know what
Melanie
is.
That was Anna and Jeanette's custody case, and Melanie was kicked off the case after making it about herself.
Mm-hmm.
Name two parts of Hunter's body that Callie adores.
Didn't she love his butt, even though he has a non-existent butt?
Yep, that's one of them. Speaking of butt.
The lips.
Now you know what Remy is.
There you go. What is Ted's cat's name?
Lupe.
Now you know what rimming is.
What is the fake name of Woody's when the gang is in Toronto?
It was Moosey's?
Now you know what rimming is.
What piece of fruit did Ted use to woo Dandy Lube? You commented on it on this podcast.
That means nothing. I'm just going to say mango.
It was an apple.
You fucked up big time.
Remember he was like flipping the apple around and he dropped the apple?
Oh.
What is Hunter's real first name?
Damn. That's taking it back. You know his last name is Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter. I can't. I don't know.
You fucked up big time.
James. James Hunter Montgomery. And his mother, Rita, occasionally called him Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
What is the name of Drew Boyd's football team?
Oh, God, they're like the Iron something.
Final answer?
It's Iron.
You fucked up big time.
It's the Pittsburgh Iron Men.
Iron Men. Rough.
What brand underwear did Drew Boy model in
Brown
the
Athletics? Shoot?
Now you know what rimming is.
There you go. Look at that. What's your score on this, Matt?
Let's take a look. In the so blatantly wrong, you gave me zero, so that's good. I got two on the sort of right. I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 wrong. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 right? How about that?
So you did better this year than last year.
I did. I think this is where I would get halfway to the million, and then I would call it quits.
You wouldn't.
That's where
a friend.
I'm at right now. Yeah. So I think for season five, I gotta have multiple choice. If I see it, I'll remember it.
We'll do multiple choice for that one. Thanks for joining us for all of season four. Next time on Still Queer as Folk, season five, Brian plans a trip to Hollywood to see Justin, who is found at a naked pool party.
Scandalo.
Ben and Michael discover Hunter at a neighborhood rave. And Debbie and Carl walk in on Emmett being plowed. That's episode one of season five, widely regarded as the worst season of Queer as Folk. And it's called Move and Leave.
Reviews and ratings wherever you're listening to us are much appreciated and helps others find the show. So please take a moment and help us out. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at StillQueerAF and on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk.
You can find me on Instagram at Patrick Randall if you'd like to connect with me directly.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MatthewPD.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Still Queer as Folk was produced by me, Patrick Randall, for Slightly Unbalanced. Matt Dominguez wrote and performed the show with me tonight. We hope you'll join us next week for a new episode. Still Queer as Folk was made with love in Chicago.